Welcome to Talking Baseball. We've got special guest Jake Odorizzi on the show, and we're going to talk about the life of a pro ball player. What's going on, everybody? Thank you for joining us today and hanging out for a little bit. No Jake, it is John Boy, myself, and Trevor Plouffe. We are back in our respective homes. I'm in the Bronx. Trev's in L.A. Does it feel good to be back?
It feels really nice. I do miss the RV, but it's nice to, like, shower in a nice shower, sleep in a big bed. So, yeah, I'm happy.
Yeah, it was I didn't get fully sick of the RV. All right, we can say goodbye, but I don't need to right now. So that's good. How'd the Little League game go?
Dude, I was dog tired. You know, I think I told you guys, but I missed my connector flight. Had to, you know, go late to Dallas, wake up at 6 a.m. in Dallas, fly home, hustle back. But it was good, man. Like, the kids give you energy. Like, they got energy in spades, man. So I got there and it was fine. It was good.
Is Teddy the ringer?
He's small, you know, cause he's young. So we have a couple guys that are bigger, like older, that are pretty good, but he's working his way up. He's good for his like size and age. He's pretty good.
All right. There you go. Yeah. We have a lot of patrons we need to thank at the start of this show. We have, and hang with me, cause we were on the road and we weren't able to do this. We have 1, 2, 3, Kelly, Horith, Robert, Lado, Rural Bob, Robbie Ferris, Bob, holy shit. Is that four Roberts in a row? Robert Lado, Rural Bob, Robbie Ferris, and Bob. Four Bobs in a row. Shout out to the Bobs. Jess Hastings, Mitchell Brunner, Anne Marie, Jamie Lopresti, Ari Zanger, Trevor Fafard. Wow, another Trev. Sean McGuire, Krista Marie, Alex Anderson, Charles Murray, Eli Simon, Kelby Lemons, Brian Renfro, Amy McAdam, Caden LeDuc, Tim, Scott Dahl, Eric Vanderpool, and Christian Ruzic. I don't know. Thank you very much to those people. We appreciate it.
Especially Kelby Lemons. That was my favorite name.
That was your favorite name?
Yeah.
Not the four Bobs?
No. And then the other one, Vanderpool. Kind of, like, I was feeling that one too.
Vanderpool? Vanderpump Rules? Is that what that show's called?
It is. It is. I've actually seen that show.
Well, you're an LA guy. Is that an LA show?
It's more of like you're married and sometimes you have to watch what your wife watches. Just to be a good guy, you know.
All right. So there was a conversation yesterday, Trev, when the Cubs were mic'd up and Chris Bryant said that his name when he used to check into hotels was Hamilton Porter. And then they asked Rossi, he's like, hey, Skip, what was your alias when you checked into hotels? And his was Jake Taylor, which is the backup catcher, the catcher from Major League, which is so perfect.
Perfect.
So that kind of goes with the theme of this show, which is just like the life of a pro ball player. So I'm going to open it up. Did you have an alias?
I did. Mine was Jimmy Page, guitarist for Led Zeppelin. And that was an easy one for me to remember.
But wait. Or isn't it supposed to be someone not famous? Like, wouldn't you then maybe have people bothering you who thought you were a Led Zeppelin guy?
I don't think Jimmy Page was going to be like in Kansas City. You know, he's he's over there in London doing his thing. But there's some funny ones. Like, I think I could give some out, like guys that aren't playing anymore.
Yeah.
Delmon Young, his was Dixie.
Okay.
Last name, Normus.
Nice, Dixie Normus.
So I mean that's fun. You have to do it because you'll get like strange calls from like agents, like random agents, which I have no idea like how a cold calling a hotel could ever work in an agent's favor, but they do it.
Really? I was gonna ask, like, do you really need an alias? Like, who's coming? I guess that's one answer. Agents, they'll just call hotels and be like. Like, if the Twins are in Kansas City, they'll just call hotels and just start dropping, like, hey, do you have a Trevor Plouffe staying there? and hopes that
I guess I don't really know what the protocol is for hotels to like not let people just call, but like I assume if you call a hotel and you ask for whoever, like don't they just connect you to the room?
Yeah,
but damn, most guys have aliases, so they don't.
Seems like a terrible way to go about being an agent.
I totally agree. You know, that's more like minor league,
okay,
stuff. You know, these guys are like kind of on the ground floor trying to get in early, but yeah, just random stuff like that. So that's, I think that's the biggest reason why guys have it, and it's just like fun.
Yeah, you know? That seems like it's really fun.
Do you bag tag same way? Like you don't want your name on the bag tag and all that stuff.
So do you have your alias on the bag tag?
Yes.
Was anyone's alias so good that like you did you just start calling Delman Dixie as a nickname?
Yeah, he got called that a lot. People loved his for sure. And then if you start to like get guys to tell you what their alias is, because you kind of have to guard it a little bit, then you could start doing some funny stuff like charging room service to their room, and you know, because you have the little itinerary that you get and have like the room list and stuff. So, you know, 204, I know my buddy's there. Like, let's just charge a movie or charge, you know, this room service order to him. And most of the time, the guys don't even know. And then you got to tell them.
Is it their bill or is it the team's?
No, it's their bill. You have to do like the incidentals and stuff.
All right. Who was the biggest room service guy? Were you a big room service guy?
I kind of was, to be honest with you. More so like, just if I was over it and tired, like you just, it's so easy just to do it. But man, I mean, anyone that goes to a hotel knows room service is crazy expensive, you know? So when you're in the show, it's like, yeah, whatever. It's
not, and you have the public pressure to tip. You have the public pressure to tip more, because otherwise they'll just tweet out MLB Twins, Trevor Plouffe is a cheapskate.
I try to tip well. I did. And I don't understand, like, whoever like designed like the system for hotels and their room service, it's like service charge, delivery charge, automatic tip, and then they add like the additional tip line, which is so bullshit. But like you said, can't be out here on the streets having people think you're cheap.
No. Yeah.
So my go-to is like extra $5 on the additional tip. You know, see you later.
All right, let's walk through a road trip then. Yeah. So say you have a weekend series, and do we want to do a fun city or a boring city? I think that's two different things.
Let's do fun.
All right, say you have a weekend series in New York City, and you have the Thursday beforehand off.
Ooh.
So do you arrive? Does the team arrive Thursday morning, and then you have the day off, or do you hang out wherever you were Thursday?
It just depends. So like, say you played Wednesday day game and then you had Thursday off. It depends on your skipper and like kind of what your team mentality is. I've done both where like you'll fly in Wednesday, you know, have Wednesday night and the entire off day in the city.
That sounds ideal, because then you can go after it Wednesday night if you want and have a full day of hangover recovery day.
Guys love that. But sometimes like it's like family guys would rather be at home, because they don't want to be yelled at by their wives, stuff like that. So,
well, if it's an off day between two away series, you could definitely do that.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Okay. That's the best. So yeah, like Wednesday, say we left Wednesday.
Yeah.
And like kind of the reason we're doing this is because these are some of the questions that every ball player gets asked. Like, tell me about the travel, tell me about the hotels, tell me about just the lifestyle, whatever. So, Wednesday you show up to the fields, and you're kind of rocking your plane attire. Like for me, it was, we had suits, but that's kind of gone by the wayside now. Like it's more like casual on the planes and stuff, but you wear what you're going to wear on the plane, and you pull up to the park.
Yep.
And there's a big truck waiting for all your bags. So basically you pull up, put the thing in park. There's someone there. You pop the trunk. They take the bag for you. You know, you throw them a little tip there. It's usually one of the clubhouse guys. And then you head into the ballpark. So you didn't even touch your bag. Like, that bag's gone. It's like going to go on the plane. See you later. Go play the game. Hopefully you do well. That's the best. Like, you go have like a 3-for-4 game and then off day. And so you get to like just feel yourself.
Yeah.
For the next 24 hours before like you have to do it all over again. So – Hopefully you have a good game. And then again, like your bags, like your clubhouse guy's going to pack your bag for you. So all of your away clothes are packed, you know, essentially all you're doing at that point is your extra stuff. So if there's like any special shirt you want to bring or cleats you want to bring, like that's the stuff you pack, but everything else is already packed for you. Your hats are already packed, your helmets, your bats, all that shit is.
Your child with a great mother again.
It's insane. You know, the more and more I look back on it, you know, you really didn't do shit. But that's kind of, that's what they want. They want you to focus on the game.
Yeah. All right. You talked about playing well before an off day. I have a question for you. Since Boone took over the Yankees, he loves giving guys back-to-back off days. So say Thursday's an off day, he would take two regulars like Didi and Glaber and give them Wednesday off. They don't play in the game on Wednesday. How would you have liked that as a player? How long does two off days go as far as like muscle recovery and mental recovery?
Yeah, I think it's great. And I think it kind of differs on players and like where you're at in your season. Like if you're hot, like and you're seeing the ball well, you're like, fuck no. Like,
yeah,
put me in there. Like, well, I'll get my day. And then, so I think those are, I bet if you looked like when he was doing that, it was either like they had a ton of games in a row.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like his way of just really making sure everyone got healed up, or these guys were struggling a little bit.
Yeah.
Like, I remember, you know, man, like Dozier, before he went off and hit like a zillion homers that year, they gave him an entire series off. Like Mahler was like, we're in Kansas City, you're not playing these next three games. And like, just sit down, shut up, like be a fan. And he did that, had a little like readjust, and boom, he went off. So like mentally, I think it's really nice sometimes to know that like, hey, I got 2 days where I can just shut it off, man.
Yeah.
Or like if I want to go in the cage and like work on something, like I can just go bang it out and not have to worry about like the process into the game. So that's kind of good. But I think more so it's like, get away from the game. Like, you know, just have a reset, a mental reset.
All right.
But I do like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's they do it every year now. So maybe other teams do that too. I don't follow the schedules as closely.
Yeah.
So what, if you get into a state, if you get into New York City for that weekend game and you get in Thursday night, right? And you arrive Thursday night because you played the getaway day Thursday. You fly after the game. You're arriving like 9 at night. The Friday game's a night game. Are people going out that Thursday night with a night game the next day on Friday?
You can. It kind of just depends, you know, who they are. Yeah, especially starting pitchers. So, like, if they're not pitching, sure, they're going to go out. The thing about, like, road games is you don't stretch until 4 o'clock. You know, maybe like 4:30. So you could essentially go out till 2 a.m. and then sleep till noon or 1 if you needed to. So it's, I mean, guys definitely do that. But as you get a little bit older, it starts to catch up to you and shit. So like my younger days, for sure, I was doing that 100%. It's probably not a good thing though.
Sabathia on R2C2 said that the Yankees, whenever there was a team coming into New York City for the weekend series, and it was there, and they were from a city that, like Kansas City, or a city that didn't have a good nightlife or party scene, he's like, we would look around and be like, we better beat these fuckers, especially if they were young and you knew they were out partying. Like, there was something that they looked at on the schedule to like put in their brain. Do you agree?
I totally agree. And I think that I've heard similar stories in other sports too. Like in hockey, the Vegas Golden Knights, like they get that advantage because guys come in and just like wild out.
Yeah.
It's Vegas, and why not? LA, the Lakers kind of get that same effect. Like, I got buddies that kind of, do a lot of the nightlife out here. So like they know who's out. So they'll like name drop like guys that were out and like, just watch, this guy's going to play terrible. He was fucked up in my restaurant last night. Like, you know,
that's funny.
Yeah. But I mean, you have to do stuff like that because you gotta break it up. Like I said, mentally, I think it's the biggest thing. Like sometimes you just need to go out and have a night. Because you're
there
every day. You're just, you know, grinding, and everyone's might need a release.
Is there a release police on each team? Is it like an assistant coach? Is it an older player? Is it like the traveling secretary? Like, is there someone doing curfew checks? Is there someone that gets on you? Like, hey, is there ever been a time where the manager has to be like, no going out tonight? Like, you know, it's late August, it's September. Like,
you could get like a pull to the side and be like, hey man, like, reel it up a little bit, like, reel it in, you know. But they're never gonna be like, you can't go out. They always say you're professional and this is your career. So if you want to fuck your career by going out every night, a la Baker Mayfield or something, you know.
Yeah. I mean, Kobe used to say that he would, like, get on guys who were going out and not showing up early to work out and stuff like that. So there was
Once it starts affecting your, like, your work, then yes, that's 100% people are going to get on you because they know.
All right.
And, you know, a lot of the older guys love to hear the stories. The young guys come in, they're like, you know, tell me what happened last night. Let's hear it.
Living through the glory years.
You have to, yeah. And those guys, you know, it's all great. And then if they start playing shitty, it's like, hey, well, we know why.
Yeah. So,
you know,
how about, like, I'm trying to dodge a word here.
Okay.
People that show up at hotels when they know baseball players are there. So you have the card collectors that are probably there when you get off the bus and then there in the morning when you get on the bus. There's probably some girls that are going to hotel whenever players come in. Is there another group of people, or are those really the two that are, like, kind of hanging around?
At the hotels? You know, I think that's changed a little bit too. Security, they don't just let people, like, hang around, you know, at least in my experience. You know, you'll have people in the lobbies, whatnot, but they try to keep it, I guess, safe for guys.
Are there familiar faces, though? Like, do you guys get used to, like, all right, we're going to Detroit. That damn autograph seeker is going to be there. That's annoying as fuck. We got to dodge him.
I mean, some you would recognize just because they're always there. But I'm going to sound really mean right now. Just I'm going to go for it.
Okay.
I, like, didn't look a lot of the guys in the eye.
You didn't want to be on that level with them?
You know, if, like, the way they get you is you're just, like, you're going to the bus, like, they just call your name and, like, you feel bad. So, like, every once in a while, like, you just go over there and it's just, like, you know what they're doing with them. If there's kids, man, you interact with the kids and you do the whole thing. But these autograph guys, I mean, like, if you do decide to sign for them, I think most guys just go, like,
I don't understand, like, you shouldn't feel bad saying that. Like, these guys are making money off your signature, and the way they get your signature is by hounding you.
Hounding. Longoria was stalking. Really good with his guys. He would just be like, he would just yell at him essentially and ask him, like, what the F are they doing here? Like, go to work, you know? Like, he was good with it. Like, he didn't give a shit. Probably because he got hounded more than, you know, most guys, because he's
on the Rays. Yeah.
But yeah, definitely stay away from that as much as you can. And they've made it harder and harder. I think they've started to understand, like, the potential risks there too. Like, you don't know who. What the freak?
His Trev's video just went out. I can hear you.
Yeah,
still.
Well, I'm still going. Yeah, you don't know the potential risks that happen, you know, or that can happen.
Yeah, I mean the autograph guys are just basically paparazzi. A lot of technical difficulties here on this episode, but we're persevering. We're just talking about how adult autograph seekers are basically paparazzi, and I don't think we should tiptoe around shaming them for what they do, because they're just making money off professional players' names by hounding them and guilting them into signing. I'm anti autograph sellers. Hard stance.
I still feel bad, like, talking negatively about them. I don't know why.
I don't know why. A lot of ball players do.
They're nice. Like, they're always nice to you, and then you kind of feel bad. Like, you're just like, you know, it's basically telling them to go F themselves.
I mean, if you go to spring training, if you don't know what we're talking about, and you go to a spring training game and just get there really early and then look around and see who your company is, and it's like, sad.
So. Yeah, I'm curious if people actually make money off this. Like, a guy that's asking Trevor Plouffe for his autograph, like, buddy, I don't think you're going to make a lot of money on that card, you know? So
who knows?
I guess the quantity thing, like you just got to get a bunch of them and throw them on eBay and see what happens.
Oh, I mean, like say the Twins win the World Series, then you have like every Twin signed this. I have every Twins autograph. Yeah. So I guess like that's their game.
I'd rather do that than like the binder full of like 12 cards.
Yeah, that's weird.
Yeah.
Anyway, what about girls? You ever go to Detroit and they're like, oh, she's going to be here.
Not really.
No.
You know, I that wasn't my world because I was, you know, I was always wifed up.
There was a girl who in Chicago was known for doing that with baseball players, and she shot a baseball player. And then she went on to hooker shoots Cubs baseball player. She went on to have her own Broadway show.
Wow.
Yeah.
I've never heard of that.
This happened recently. This also happened in 2012. Damn.
Where was this at? Chicago?
Yeah, it was back in the 20s because the guy got the guy got shot. We did a whole thing on it last from the past because the guy who got shot, then because the guy on the Cubs got shot, they had to trade for a player, and they traded for this guy that was part of the 1927 Yankees, was a teammate of George of Babe Ruth, and then he was part of the whole Babe Ruth pointed and called his shot thing. But like the story starts with like this hooker, I forget. There's been a lot of cases of that. She meant to shoot one baseball player, couldn't find him, turned around, shot the next. So that hasn't been your experience?
I mean, look, like, am I going to sit here and say there's just like not girls like around? Like, of course there is, but it just wasn't my area, you know? You know, I knew there was a few hotels where you'd go to and you knew like there was going to be people there that are.
Yeah.
Looking. Detroit was one of them.
Oh yeah.
Detroit was one of them. Yeah.
Okay.
And we stay
nothing else going on.
We stay outside of the city. And so like you just show up and there'd be like, I remember a few times, like three or four like girls, like really just like dressed up, like really nicely.
Yeah.
And then like one guy just like there.
Ooh.
And so like you kind of got the dynamic that was going on right there. But again, like maybe it's just my experience. I just never, it was just like, what is going on here? Like get these guys out of here.
Yeah. All right, so just for anyone that's very interested, the girl's name was Violet Popovich, and she shot Cubs shortstop Billy Gergis in 1931.
That's insane.
Yeah, and then she
20s and 30s were there. That's a wild time.
She went on to like do a Broadway play, like all about like the dame who shot the shortstop.
That's hilarious. That kind of makes sense. That kind of like goes with what's happens now. Like you can get famous for doing a lot of stupid shit.
Yeah. Yeah. And then
turn it into something.
And then because Billy Gergis was out, they called up another shortstop. It's all this shit. It's a cool story. Did it on Laughs from the Past. Babe Ruth's called shot.
I'm going to check it out.
Everything we've been asking a lot of players this when we do the interviews, who's your plane buddy? Mm-hmm. Cause it seems like that's a vital part of flying. Like the planes, as far as I know these days, there's the cards crew.
Yep.
And then there's the, like the just Netflix and doing your own thing crew.
Yeah, that's a great dynamic, you know, on the plane. You're absolutely right. There is always a cards table, and you'll have the cards. Like I was always at the card table that was playing for money, and like, you know, we play dealer calls, a ton of poker games, and you're doing that on the plane, and that's a lot of fun. Then you have the guys who are like to play cards to pass the time, but they're playing stuff like spades or pasoy, and it's just like for fun.
Okay, child's table.
Yeah. Then you have the video games guys, and that's kind of a newer thing where like you have these consoles. The guys bring like fucking screens onto the plane, and they have like their setup, and like they'll like legitimately just like set it up, and like you can hook them up. They play like Mario Kart against each other, or they're playing whatever the game is. I'm not a gamer.
That sounds really fun, but also like a lot of a hassle. Are they having someone set that up for them? Is this like the bag situation?
You know, like. The only thing they'd have to do is just like bring that bag on a plane. Cause it is like, it's in like this collapsible case, and you just like, it's like a briefcase, and they fucking open it up, and there's a video game screen. They do that. So you have those guys. Then you have the guys that just want to sleep. A lot of guys, like, whether it's they're nervous to fly or whatever, they're just tired. Like, there's always the sleepers, bro. Like,
yeah,
just get on the plane and they're gone. I could never do that. I wish I could sleep on planes, but
I can't. I'm about to do as people are listening to this, I'm on doing 2 cross country flights in one day. I'm flying to Arizona in the morning, taking the red eye back. Then Friday, Jake and I got to record in the morning, and I'm not going to be able to sleep. I might try to do a weed gummy on the plane for the first time. I'm always too scared. Ooh. I don't want to knock myself out. I don't want to be too silly on the plane. You have any experience with that?
I do.
I didn't know. I was about to just.
No, it's okay. It's okay. Look at the hat I'm wearing.
Okay. I was about to say, you just flew high.
I did. And it helped me out a ton, man.
Like, okay.
I don't think we should be ashamed about talking about that, Jim. You know,
I just didn't know. I didn't want to be the one to share that story of yours.
I think it's pretty well known that I partake.
Okay. Well, it's funny. Like when we talked with you the first time, you were saying how guys would get drunk every night and then they'd have a hangover and they'd be like, you know, they'd get into trouble with girls or fights or whatever. Yeah. And they'd look at you or anyone that smoked weed and was like, dude, you can't do that. And yeah. You're like, all I do is get high and sit on the couch. Like yeah. The drinking's way worse.
It is way worse. And that's a stigma in baseball. It's so ridiculous. Like you'll get guys that they'll crack 3 or 4 beers right after the game. And there's nothing wrong with that. I get, you know, every once in a while, but that catches up to you, dude. And you know, we're both in our 30s and
yeah.
You can't recover the same way when you're when I was 20, I could crack 3 or 4 beers and be totally fine.
When we were on the RV trip, we drank a couple beers every night, but I never really got drunk.
Yeah, we know not to do that anymore. We're smart.
Because I can't. I don't function the next day.
Yeah, the weed gummies can definitely help, and that's
okay.
Something that's especially now, we're getting more and more lenient in baseball with cannabis. So I think it's going to help.
You know? Okay. Good. Sounds good to me.
But
so I'll do that.
That
so,
kind of brings me to, I wanted to talk about the food.
Okay. Think
that's, people ask me all the time about that. And then my wife yells at me because she says I've been institutionalized.
Okay.
Once you're in baseball, I mean, there's a few things that happen. You have a schedule every day and they tell you what to do. So all you got to do is just do your routine, do your schedule. That's it. Play the game. You don't have to think about anything because they don't want you to think about anything. They just want you to think about baseball. So one of the reasons one of the ways I'm institutionalized that I get yelled at all the time is baseball players are grown. They get accustomed to a big spread of food, an array of food. You show up to the ballpark, whether it's breakfast and you can make your own omelet station. You have donuts, anything you can think of, you're going to have.
You just walk into buffets everywhere you go.
You just walk in, you're like, oh, I don't really feel like that. Can you make me this? Or oh, this looks good. Oh, but I'll have some of this, some of that. And that's every damn meal at the stadium. And then, so now I'm done playing and my wife will make me a couple eggs and I'll kind of look at her that's all we got. Where's my fruit bowl of cut up beautiful fruit that's presented beautifully? And, you know, where's my 6 choices of proteins? Let's go. And I know now not to say anything.
Yeah.
A few times she's like, you're an idiot. You stop being a spoiled baseball player. Go make your own fucking bacon.
<You know? laughs> Dude, I mean, sounds like the life. Dansby Swanson on the show was telling us the cook for the Braves in spring training, at least, knows all of their personal preferences and dietary restrictions. So if she makes this meal, she'll also have this special plate just for Dansby.
It's insane. I mean,
you guys are just fucking babied.
Babied. After the game, say we're talking getaway days now, right? So
yeah.
You play the game, you have your spread. And typically, on getaway days, they really try to, go above and beyond because that's tip day.
Oh.
Tips in, right?
Nice.
So you're going to get, the prime shit on your last day. So you have that food. And a lot of guys are like, fuck, I don't even want to eat because I was just up for a game. You know, I'm not hungry right now. So you pass that over. You're like, oh, maybe I'll grab something. Get on the plane. More fucking food. Here's the menu of food we have on the plane, and do you want this? There's always like some specialty item from the city that you play in. So like if you're in Kansas City, they're going to have like some sort of barbecue, like pre-takeoff food.
Okay.
And then once you get up in the air, they have the other fucking food.
Damn.
A lot of guys don't like to eat on the plane. So then it's, where are we going to dinner? Where's the show dinner at? If we're in New York, you know, are we going someplace that's amazing? Are we ordering room service? I always go to Ray's Pizza.
Okay.
And just crush it. So it's a big food, man. Now that I really think back on it, food is such a huge part of these days. You kind of, there's no shortage, man. They just want to stuff your face.
Well, and you're athletes, so you like need all, you can take all the calories and you're working out every day and stretching every day and doing all that shit.
And you go from the minor leagues where you're literally slapping together a couple pieces of bread and PB&J to this beautiful spread, and then you'll see a ton of guys like as soon as they get called up, they'll probably gain 3, 4, 5 pounds, no doubt. Just because it's
like available. The freshman 15 in college,
it is their gym. Like even if you're not, even if it's like not timed for like food to be put out, there's still just like shit available everywhere.
So I've heard you talk about it and heard every player talk about it, that Yankee Stadium away clubhouse is the best restaurant in New York City. Guys love the food at Yankee Stadium. Who's the worst? My guess is Oakland.
Oof. I don't want to. That's tough for me to say because these guys work their ass off. So, like, the guy in Oakland, Mikey, he does everything he can with what he has at his disposal.
You know, I'm sure.
He just doesn't have the means to do something like the Yankees do, you know?
Yeah.
Like, he's in there and he's got his electric stove and he's cranking out everything, and like you're gonna get the in and outs, you're gonna get the Mexican food, but you go to Yankee Stadium and they got a full professional kitchen back there, so you can get whatever you want. I would always get a pastrami sandwich and it was delicious.
That's what you get at the Yankee Stadium?
Yeah.
Did you have certain meals every like stadium, like Kansas City, you're getting barbecue?
Somewhat, yeah. We would try to, like, Kansas City, there's a place called Oklahoma Joe's, I think. And it's like a gas station place, like one of those. So we'd always like send a guy out like, hey, get 50 sandwiches and then bring him back. So you'd always kind of do that, stuff like that.
What about Seattle? Fish?
Seattle's really good. They have a good chef there that he'll cook you whatever you want. They also have a keg of Manny's Pale Ale, which was my favorite. So after the games, man, you just go there, pour yourself a beer, and it was, that's a life for me.
All right. Not bad. So you're just spoiled. They take your bags for you. They cook for you. Give you everything.
Fly you, pick you up. You know, the best thing, we always talk about like double ear flap helmets and single ear flap helmets. Another great thing that as you climb up the ladder that happens for you is you get your cleats cleaned. I know that sounds like stupid, but low level minor leagues, you don't really get that done. So like you'll see guys walking around with scrub and bubbles in their bag. And like, cause you don't want to look like you want to look professional. You don't want your cleats all fucked.
I'm a big fan of dirty equipment. So when I buy new shoes, I just walk through the grass right away. It's a self-conscious thing. I don't think I'm worthy of having anything new. Like, my hockey equipment, I bought the last set of hockey equipment I bought was when I was 15. And I used that up until 2 years ago in men's league. Like I just hate new stuff. My brother's the opposite. He loves new stuff. Like, do you remember John Wetland for the Yankees wore the same hat all season? Yeah, it was disgusting.
It's disgusting.
I love that shit. I think I'd be one of those people.
I could see that. You know, sometimes they won't even allow you to do that.
You know, I can understand why. You look gross.
You look gross. I would pine tar like my helmet, like get like the logo like really pine tar, just because I thought it looked cool and I was trying to be show. And then,
it wasn't natural wear and tear.
You just get in there. Anybody, let me tell you this, dude. Anybody that has like all the pine tar all over everything, that is on purpose and like it's just for show.
It's not natural.
No.
What about like Robinson Cano and some batters always have the pine tar in their back from resting their bat? Yeah. Are they doing that to look cool, or is that
natural?
No,
that's on accident, but that is just because they want their bat to look cool.
Okay.
Like that's one of the more fun things you can do as a hitter. Like you get your bats in And all of a sudden it's like, all right, now I got to get them ready. So like I had a process, you know, I would do like the stick pine tar first, really lather it on there. I would even tape like the edges. So like, it would be perfect.
Lined up.
Then you put the real pine tar on it. Then you put the rosin on it and you just get it. It needs to sit for a day. Then it's perfect. But really, I mean.
Yeah, but that's just kind of like a mindset thing. It's like hockey players taping their sticks.
Exactly.
It's just something to do to keep your mind. It's like therapeutic in a way and all that stuff. That's cool.
Yeah. I would do like the helmet thing, do it all over my helmet. And then so I would get it perfect. Like it was just like gunked up. I look like a ball player, you know, whatever. And then you show up one day and they'd fucking clean it off.
Damn.
It's like, dude, stop, you know, I don't stop cleaning.
I'm trying to look show here.
I'm trying to look show. I think that's a good, like, we always talk about like, you know, what can we do on our social and stuff. And I we talked about a little bit on the trip, like the glow up.
Yeah.
Cause you love dirty stuff. So like the minor leagues would be perfect for you.
Yeah. But no, I mean, it sounds the eating part and the sleeping on buses and living with five guys in one apartment or whatever. That sounds pretty shitty.
Like, who's the showiest guy for you? Like, who's the guy that you think, like, wow, that guy looks like a big leaguer? Like, and he's, like, his uniform's good. Like, he wears a good uniform.
On the Yankees?
Sure.
I mean, that's where I'm naturally going to go. I don't know. There's, like...
It's tough on the Yankees because they, like...
They all kind of do it.
So, who's your guy?
It's more like... So, Brandon Drury came over to the Yankees.
Oh, yeah. I know him.
And Jake and I just watching a couple spring games because he didn't stick for a while. He went blind and then he got sent down to the minors and all that. But we were just like, damn, he looks like a ball player. Just his presence in the box and his presence at third base and the way he wore his uniform, we were like, that dude looks like a pro ball player. I don't know why. I can't really explain it.
I'm surprised that guy hasn't taken off because I thought the same thing when I saw him. Like he just looks the part.
Yeah.
But it would be funny to do the glow up, like show him in his minor league uniform. Because it's impossible, dude, to make your minor league uniform look cool.
Especially when they have you dressing up in cartoon characters and shit.
It's never going to happen. Then you get to the show and it's like, bro, the difference. The difference is
crazy. Dude, it's the double ear flap. It's the weird uniforms.
Pants don't fit.
Is that a thing? So hey, how about uniforms? I think we got to wrap this up soon. But uniforms, like when you get up there and you get to the big leagues, do they just guesstimate your size? Is it exact measurements? Are they just giving you like medium, large, 30, no, 32, 34, 36? Like what is it?
You get fitted in spring training. So like they'll have, it used to be the Majestic people. So I guess it's the same as Nike people now, but they'll come and they measure you and they say, do you want your pants tapered? That means they can.
Yeah. Do you want them tight as fuck like Verlander or do you want them show?
You can do whatever you want.
And what did you do?
I would just kind of like have them measure me and just make sure they fit right. But then, you know, the open bottom look was popular. It's kind of going away now. Like people are getting more like trim pants, but like the baggy open bottom look was really in. So before you would have to cut the rubber band on the bottom of your pants and then like stretch them out a lot to get that open look. But then they started like saying, okay, we'll just do it for guys. So you could like get the open pant look. And then if you wanted them to stay over your shoes, they would cut like the side of your pants and like, and do like this hemming process and just get it like super dialed in for you. So yeah, they have like specific pants for you. It's going to have your name stitched in the back, all that crap. So it's going to, they want you to look nice. They want you to feel good.
There was like Rizzo wears baggy pants.
Mm-hmm.
Did you wear, and Verlander wears the tightest pants ever. So, like, those are, like, he's saying, hey, I like them real tight.
Yeah.
Okay.
Have you seen the Harper pants? I feel like those are kind of, like, the next big thing, how Harper's wearing his pants.
Right now?
It's almost like they're tight, and then, like, they're, like, on the ankles, they're tapered.
Yeah, they're like joggers.
They're, like, exactly. I think that's going to be the new trend because guys want to show their kicks off.
I'm looking at pictures of Harper right now, and he's turned baseball pants into joggers.
Yes.
Interesting.
So, like I said, it was, for a while, give me the biggest, baggiest pants you could find, because that's cool.
Yeah.
But now
CC Sabathia still wears, he was wearing parachute pants.
What would you do?
I wouldn't care about looks at all. I just care about comfort. So, like, I wouldn't do joggers. That seems uncomfortable. I think I'd do, like, I was looking at pictures of you, like, just kind of, like, tapered down, but not tight.
Yeah.
I don't want to be all tight out there.
People, you know, I guess I didn't have the best. Sometimes I felt like I looked good in the uniform, and sometimes I felt like I didn't. So
that's life, man. But
it's life.
I would go high socks. I don't think I'm good enough to go high socks, but I liked whenever I played in high school, I went high socks.
It's the most comfortable thing. Another fashion. We saw this a little bit on our trip. The new fashion thing guys are doing. It's pregame short pants. So the high sock pants. Hold on, keep getting called right here. Pregame short pants, and then it's like you don't even wear socks. You wear leggings, and then over the leggings you put like crew socks.
Okay,
that's the new look.
Weird.
It's like, yeah, you have like cool looking socks, like, you know, like Stance, the company Stance. They do a bunch of like cool stuff for MLB. So yeah, you have short pants, your leggings that are usually like black or whatever, and then you have like the crew socks. And people are just like flexing, dude. Like, it's become such a flexing league. It wasn't that.
Well, it's good. Before. They need that. They need to get the fashion going and all that. What about a uniform after the game? Like, is it just you just put it in the hamper, and then when you show up the next day, it could be the same exact uniform. It could be a brand new one. You have no idea.
Usually it's the same one. But yeah, that's another show thing. Minor leagues, you have a loop, and you put your pants and your jersey, those go in just naked. You just throw them in, and then everything else you'd have to put on a loop. So like, you get the loop back the next day, and the good clubbies would take the shit off the loop and hang for you. But a lot of them aren't good clubbies, so they would just like hang the loop up, and all your stuff is just like wrinkled and gross and
ew,
whatever. But in the show, everything's loose. Just throw it in there, and they put your name on everything too, so they know which is yours. But it's just that much easier. They baby you that much more.
So your
it's
home,
just like, take your shit and throw it in the fucking hamper.
Your home white jersey.
Yes.
How many different versions of that do you think you wear over 81 home games? Say you wear it 70 of the 81 home games for the Twins. Mm-hmm. Is it one jersey you're wearing all 70 games? Do you have any idea?
I think it just depends. You know, if there's a rip or they want to take it, you did something good in it. But I'd assume it's mainly the same one.
Can you request, like, if you have a rip, but you're 7 for your last 10, can you be like, hey, don't change out my jersey, I need that rip?
Yeah, you can say that for sure. You'll see a lot of guys, like, it's interesting. If you, now that we're talking about it, I want everyone to kind of go look at everyone's uniform. Like, the patchwork is strange how they do it. It like, kind of doesn't look that great. It's like all these like squiggly little lines. Like, if you bust your knee, like you slide, you bust your knee open, they like go in from behind and like, I don't even know what they do, but it doesn't look clean.
Okay.
It's not like a clean patch. No, it's just how it happens.
Damn.
But you'll see a lot of guys, especially guys that steal bases. You go ahead and like look at their knees and like their butt. You're going to see like this weird
squiggle
patchwork. Yeah.
All right. Will do. All right. I think, you have anything else we didn't talk about?
That was good. There's some more stuff we'll get to next time, but
maybe Jake has some questions for next time.
I think it's fun to like get in and talk about some of the stuff, because these are questions that you get asked all the time. So maybe we'll answer them.
All right, cool. And then we do have a interview with Odorizzi coming up. We sat down with him in the club's, the Twins clubhouse, the club's twin house, and chatted a little bit. So here is that.
On this episode of Two Jakes Talking, it's myself and Jake Odorizzi. Am I saying Odorizzi right?
Correct.
Do people 100%. Slaughter it?
Yeah, but more so when I was younger than now. It's kind of, I guess, a little more common.
Okay.
Now, but I've heard just about every pronunciation you can imagine. So when people like trail off and don't commit to it, I know they're trying to get to me.
Jake Odo.
That's my specialty.
Yes.
Is Odo the nickname?
Yes. Yeah, it's short and simple, and I think everybody can get that one.
I like that. Yeah, so we chatted with you earlier today. Pitchers have camp pretty easy, huh?
Yeah, I mean, if I just could have left after I was done playing catch, I would have been out of here to catch like a breakfast at some place still. But no, there's a lot of work to be done after the fact. Like, you know, got to get treatment, workout, that whole sort of thing. The unsexy stuff, the stuff that behind the scenes, that's the important stuff. So we got a lot of time to do that. So there's not a lot of, you got to do it. That's kind of what it boils down to.
Have things changed in camp from last year with the whole, a lot of the coaches have left and you got new coaches? Is it the same philosophy, just guys bumped up, or is it anything completely new?
Everything's pretty relatively the same with Rocco. Rocco kind of didn't shift anything, but we've had, you know, not too many times I've seen this many coaches leave and go different areas. off of major league staff, and good for them though that they get different opportunities. I've been with Shelty for a long time, and to see him get a manager job is really cool, and he'll do great to it. And you know, he was a finalist for this job before Rocco got it, so there's a lot of people over there that are really happy that he's got that job. And I guess that's a good thing when your coaches kind of get poached a little bit. It means you're doing things the right way, and happy for them all.
You said it right at the end there. If you're winning, then people start poaching you, and that's how it goes a little bit. We, I should mention John Boy and Trevor Plouffe are here. Besides the Two Jake show, we'll just keep running it anyways. We talk some pitching stuff, and dude, like, that's awesome. Like, we love that stuff because, we talked like. I won't even say analytics light. It was like analytics light. And you were talking, some spin rate stuff. How much do you get into that? And how much do the Twins organization get into that? Or, does it boil down to you? Or how's that work?
Yeah, I think we alluded to it a little bit earlier. But with Wes being in charge now, I think they've taken more of an analytical side. And we have a lot of these cool toys that you hear talk about, Force Plates and Rapsodos, TrackMan, Edgetronics. So I think that's pretty generic with the last three in just about every camp now. But the problem with all the analytics, you have to have somebody to decipher it for you. Kind of what we had spoken about earlier. It's you just can't buy it and you're automatically going to be better. You have to know what you're looking for as a player. And then B, you're going to have guys that have to be able to interpret it because there's so much information if you really take a deep dive into things. You get lost really quickly and kind of transform yourself into a pitcher you can't be or you're not supposed to be. So there takes a little bit of brain power from the pitcher as well to know I need maybe an improvement here. I could improve in these areas as opposed to, hey, this is all your data. Let's make it all better. Like, that's just not a realistic aspect to it. But we got a lot of good people here that know how to, make the little tweaks and get you, maybe a little bit more what you're looking for as opposed to you trying to figure it out yourself.
Who's doing that here for you? Because when I was in Philly, that was kind of where I saw analytics really being brought down to the clubhouse. Because a lot of times it used to stay in the front office, which didn't make any sense to me because if you have these numbers, you want your players to improve these numbers, it makes sense that you have to go tell them the numbers, and that just wasn't a thing. So in Philly, we had Sam Fold, and he was kind of like a player liaison. He was the perfect guy for that.
Super Sam,
smart dude, and relatable. So he'd bring the numbers down. He'd talk to us about it, what we should do to improve, whatever. Is there anybody that's doing that here?
So we're all doing that in the locker room now. We have our analytics team that's on a daily basis with us. They have a little room off to where Nate's at in his little video room across the hall. That's their little area. And with Wes being here and his background with analytics, we have Colby and Frankie who do Frankie does like the infielders and hitters and Colby does the pitching side. He and Wes were together at Arkansas. So they kind of have that mashup of what they're looking for already. So it's a lot easier that he brought a guy that's up to speed with what he's looking for instead of training a new guy. So they're pretty good at interpreting all that data themselves and then bringing it to us, but giving it the more simple, the layman's terms to it, as opposed to, hey, your vertical y-axis is a negative 2 today. Usually we like it at that plus 1. It's like, hey, you're a little arm side today. We need you to be a little more glove side. Like, that's the way to do it. But they're pretty – I think they took that into account when they got the group that they have together, because like you said, if you don't have a guy like Sam, and just like you, I was fortunate enough to play with Sam, just like I was you, shout out to Trevor's playing days. My first year in Tampa, I got to talk with Sam, and you could already tell he was already in that mindset of he's going to be a good front office weapon. Essentially, like, he can do anything you need him to do. Yes. So having that guy is invaluable to a team when you can make your team better, and then he's a sought after guy after that. Like, he'll be a GM at some point. Absolutely. He'll do a lot of great things. But we got a few of those guys here that down the road when you see them in a front office, you'll be like, well, I'm not surprised at that, because they're such a good mind that what they were doing now, they have a capacity for way more than that.
Yeah, you came from Tampa where all the coaches got poached, including the manager here, Rocco, who's done an amazing job. And now it seems like Twins are kind of turning the coaches over as Shelty goes to Pittsburgh. What's the one thing that, since you've come here, you think they've helped you improve on? Like, what is there a statistic or something that you were doing that they've improved on, or are you just trying to hone in on what you were already doing?
I think getting back to what I was doing when I was at my best is what I've kind of learned here with Wes. There's another gentleman I work out with in the off season. His name is Randy Sullivan. He does the Florida Baseball Ranch, and he's got a PT background, but he's got the pitching side of it as well. So he can make these programs for guys, help you with your mobility, get you back mechanically sound. How, you know, you may have been and had an injury or whatever it is, you get out of whack and break those habits. So I'd already started all this stuff, and then when Wes got hired on here, Wes and Randy used to work together at the Texas Baseball Ranch. So what Wes was wanting everybody to come in here and do, I was already 3 months into it. And so I kind of got an early crash course on how getting more out of your body is what Wes is all about. So your movement patterns, your mechanics, your, you know, you can take your stuff up by not doing anything differently, by, you know, not gaining arm strength, whatever it is, but the way your body moves is can be tweaked. And that's what I've been able to do, is kind of get that separation, a little more flexibility. And now I'm creating just that little bit more of a rubber band effect, which has made my velo go up, which helps everything else out. As we know, it's just kind of been one of those things where it lined up perfectly for me. Like, who would have thought the guy I was working with is almost a clone of the pitching coach that just got hired on. So I'm very fortunate, and, you know, right spot, right time. But, you know, I definitely feel like I'm back to better than where I was when I was at my best.
All the preparation, analytics, and stuff that goes into projecting or changing or tweaking, what's the result data that you judge your past seasons on? Is it still ERA? I know it used to be wins, kind of got away from that.
Yeah.
Is there something you look at that, like, the first stat you go to?
So first stat that I had to go to now is the ERA plus stat, just because it's one of those blanket ones, but I like it a lot better than I like FIP, XFIP. And the, I'll give you a good view of my thoughts on analytics and those type of numbers. Like, it seems like there's whatever number is a positive, there's going to be the next year is going to be the negative of that. So they almost cancel each other out.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you can't be good at everything. And I think that's the way that, you know, whoever's making these stats or getting these formulas, it's if one gets too high, they have to rein it back in. Like, it's almost like a betting system. Like, oh, this guy's plus 500. We need to bring him down a little bit. We need to take some points away, whatever it may be. But I think ERA plus is one of those things where there's not an, you know, there's an ERA minus, but it's a lot more confusing than whatever it is. So I like the positive side of computing everybody's stats, taking the ballparks and all that into effect, and then you kind of know how you size up against the rest of the league. Where, you know, FIP's kind of the, my view of that is like an imaginary stat. Like, it's, oh, this should have happened.
Yes.
It was the bases loaded, you punch out the next three, you know you worked your ass off, you got out of it, but statistically speaking, you should have given up 1.5 runs, so that counts against you even though you had a positive outcome. But To each stat, like I said, there just seems like there's a counter stat now. So what's going to be important? It's one of those things where players are going to go on the positive side, but if you're using it against a player in a, you know, an arbitrary setting, they're going to use the negative side of it. So, you know, it's what's next, who knows? But that's the one I think is more of a tell-all than it factors in everything, not just, you know, your wins, your ERA, your walks, your strikeouts, your hard contact. Like, there's just so many things you can look at. What's important to each pitcher, I think, is the type of pitcher that you are. If you're a strikeout guy, you want to look at, you know, your batting average against could be very low because that means you have great stuff, whatever it may be. If you're a contact guy, you want your ground ball rate to be really high. I'm a fly ball guy, so I want my home run rate to be down because that means that they're fly balls, they're not home runs. So that's the kind of things personally that I look at.
Are you fingers crossed about the balls coming up?
I mean, I don't want to even say what I'm thinking right now because I don't want to jinx anything. But, you know, I'll leave it at I did pretty okay last year with
there you go
without, you know, with a ball being a
missile.
Bouncy ball,
yeah.
A Titleist or whatever we're going to call it. So I don't know. I was pretty okay with it. So if they want to keep it that way, it did okay for me last year, but I don't want to.
Have you felt a difference this year in spring?
Spring's so weird. Like, everything feels weird in spring. Yeah. So I need that, like, season to roll around where it actually says Major League Baseball, not Florida spring training logo, because, you know, maybe they just put different stamps on different situations. But it's just one of those things. It's like I'm trying to think of a good analogy for it. Like, what's the word I'm looking for a, like, a conspiracy theory? So.
Ooh.
You know, it's people believe it, p- pitcher, we feel a difference, whatever it is. The outside world says different. So it's like, is there a bigger thing that you just don't want to admit to? And it's fine if it does. Our whole thing, too, of last year at baseballs was, if there's a change, just say it.
Yes.
It's not that big of a deal. Everyone's got the same system, whatever it is. If there's a difference, great. Whatever. You know, just go out and say it, because it boils down to, it affects a lot of things. You know, if you're going to work on a arbitration system, which I was, you know, very beneficial of when I went through it, but, you know, that stuff matters. So if a new ERA is a 3 is now a 4, but guys are in that 4 range and the balls are, you know, higher than it should have been a 3, like there needs to be tweaks to the pay scale, whatever, maybe hitters same way. Now everybody's a 30 home run guy and it's, you know, the market for power hitters is much lower now. Like power hitters are getting paid less because there's more of them. So, you know, there's real life aspects to those changes as well. I think that doesn't get maybe brought up as much as just the pure, hey, we hit 800 home runs last year. That's really good for baseball.
Think and power hitters, you got a couple dudes here.
A few of them.
I got like part A, part B. If those dudes go out and they put up a 5 spot early, are you same mentality, or is it kind of? I feel like there used to be this old school approach. You think of like David Wells, and it's like, hey, you know, if we've got a big lead, I'm just going to throw fastballs and get through that. Has that kind of changed a little bit, or with these dudes, is there a little bit of a mindset change? And then who's the dude you look at on this team and you're like, good thing we got that guy, because we just sat next to Sano and he was 3 of me.
Yeah, he's a large
he's a
human
big man,
and he's gotten smaller. Yeah. So
that's
a big thing too. But you know, for to answer the first part of your question, there's been games where I pitch and it's 4-0 before I even take the field.
Right.
So mindset wise, I don't know too many David Wells out there anymore. There's gonna have the groove heaters, and we've seen
Trevor Plouffe's rooting.
You can see five runs happen pretty quickly on a non good offense if you're just, you know, trying to pitch to contact. And a lot of guys, you know, the pitch to contact thing is almost like an albatross anymore. Like it's a rare thing that somebody's just going to go out there with a 90 mile an hour pitch, just what we'll call it generic, and throw the ball over the plate, because it gets beat around. Now you got guys just waking up and rolling out of bed throwing 100. So that's I think really now, like, pride plays into it, because, you know, each day is such a special day, and you want to go out there and make the most of each day. And now, especially, you know, the ugly terminology is, you know, people get paid a lot of money to do really well. So at what point is it, you know, all right, let's just speed this game up, let's get through it. And then when it compares to, you know, maybe you go out and you punch out 12 that day and you go 8, and it's like, all right, it's 14-0, but our starters just having a career day along with our offense. So that's kind of my mindset on that. And then secondly, we have like Sano, Nelly, and then those two, I think, are the biggest when it comes to, like, a show to put on.
Right.
The other day we had a BP group of Nelly, JD, Rosie, and Sano. And I think that they honestly had to come in and get more baseballs because they were just peppering balls off buildings out there and everything along those lines. So we got a pretty good power hitting team. But we can probably put together a pretty good offensive line also.
We've been talking a lot about the home runs and the offense. And then so you – as a team, set a record, a major league record for home runs in a single season, and then you go out and you sign Josh Donaldson to add to that lineup. So you know you guys are going to score runs, but talk about like what Josh brings on the defensive side, because, you know, pitchers need that.
Yeah.
You know, you don't live and die by your defense, but it's a big part of what you do. Have you been able to see him, like, move around? I think he's 34 years old, mm-hmm. and we watched him today, and the way he moves, he's so athletic. And what does that do for you when you know you have a guy like that at third base ready to just gobble up all the ground balls?
Yeah, I mean, it shortens the game just by having a guy that you know that's going to be making the plays but also making those tough plays too. Like, the average major leaguer is going to make all the plays that are to them, you know, maybe an error here or there. But it's the guys that can do that little bit extra, but it's almost like a given that they give that little bit extra. So all the prime, you know, Arenado, Chapman, those two especially, I mean, those are the platinum, you know, gold glove winners year in and year out. You expect them to make those great plays, and it's almost like a, you know, it's a if they don't make it, you're almost blindsided by, like, all right, what do I do now? But I think over the years watching him in Toronto, playing against him all those years, it's like his defense always stood out to me because he's one of those guys, he always made it look smooth, and he has a great arm to go along with it. So he just knows, for a guy that has such a great bat like that, to have that good of a, you know, a glove on him that never gets talked about because he's such a talented hitter, is a rare, you know, a rarity. And he's always in the top, like, three of third basemen. He's never, I don't think he's ever won a gold glove, but he should be right up there every single year. So, and I think Miggy deserves a lot of credit too for, you know, kind of vacating third base and saying in his pursuit, our pursuit of him is like, hey, I'm happy to move to first base. So goes to show you that, you know, he's a team player and he's willing to adjust to a new position because he knows the type of player that JD is.
Yeah, as big as Miggy is, you guys saw him. I mean, he can move.
Yeah.
He's one of those guys. It's very surprising how well he can move for his size.
And a absolute howitzer too.
Yes, he's got a great arm. So yeah, Longoria, Plouf, and now Donaldson. I mean, you have been, you just had some great.
I've been very blessed at the hot corner, you might say.
And how'd your guys' friendship start? Was it when you went to Tampa?
Yeah, Tampa.
Did you hate him? You're like LA.
No, there's not a lot. I'm the type of, I don't make any judgments until I meet somebody. But no, you get along, you know, you're around long enough, you play against guys, and it's like the one guy that I had a mindset of, like a preemptive thought before I even met him, it was a positive way, it was Joe Mauer. Like, he was the only guy that I've ever not known that I was like, that dude's got to be the greatest dude in the world.
And
lo and behold, I meet him and play with him for a year, and he is like the man's man, the all-American guy, and exactly as I had pictured him. So that's the only time that it's ever I've been right on having a judgment before meeting somebody. So
it makes you mad how nice he is. Like, 'cause you, like, he's got all the accolades in the world. I mean, he grew up in Minnesota, you know, then he's drafted, then he does everything, wins an MVP, and he's just humble. And you sort of sometimes you're like, is this fake? And then you just realize it is not. He's genuinely the nicest person that I've ever met in my life.
Yep. So. Shout out to Joe.
Shout out, Joe.
I don't know. You got anything?
Have you ever been ejected?
Ooh. Yeah, once.
What happened?
So it was a game against the Mariners. I'm trying to think, it was 16 maybe? 16 or 17. I think it was 16. And gave up like four in the first. So I was already pissed to start that, to right into the game. I think I gave up one more. It was 5-0. We battled it back. It was 5-4. I was in the sixth inning, made it to the sixth. So I was like on the up and up. So it's a 1-0 game again in my head. And there's a guy, bases are empty, two outs. I, as you can see, I remember very clearly. I want to say it was Leonis Martin hitting when he was still with the Mariners, but I might be incorrect on that one. Through two splits back to back, 2-2 count, should have been strike three on 2-2. Run it back 3-2, move it a little more over the plate. Kirk Casale, another name, makes it look beautiful. It's inside to a lefty. Umpire sitting right there, staring right over the top of it. I start walking off, thinking, you know, we're out of it. Six innings. Feel okay with how it kind of – exactly. He balls me on it. I'm at like 100 and some odd pitches. I know I'm done, so we just kind of had it out right there, and I just threw my hands up, and I'm like, Jerry Meals. So, yeah, and I don't hold any grudges against umpires or anything like that. I just, like, I'll always remember that. I'll always remember the umpire that threw me out for the first time, and, you know, obviously I threw my hands up. I was like, where is that? Like, where are both of those? And he tells me they're inside, and I just said, no, they're not inside. They're, you know, they're right over the plate. I'm looking at it right here, you know, trying. It was just a weird thing. I was like, I'm going to give it my best effort with still trying to be a little bit respectful in the fact. But, yeah, we disagreed and I was done. And he, you know, gives you the, hey, that's enough type of thing. And I think I said, I was like, well, I'm already out of here anyway, so
let's, might as well.
Let's just get over. And then you go inside, you look at it, and you're like, okay, those were strikes. I'm not crazy. Because if they weren't, I would have, you know, sought him out and be like, hey, I was wrong, man. I can admit that. But you look at it and you're like, okay, I wasn't crazy. I thought I saw what I saw, and I did. But That's just a matter of opinion when it comes in. Pitchers have a lot shorter of a leash with an umpire than hitters do, it turns out. So, especially when you kind of make a – I made a walk from home, from the mound to
hitters,
home.
Hitters can sneak it in. Like
exactly. So,
turn around. Yeah.
I have no hard feelings against him this day. I think he's umpired a few of my games since then. It's just one of those things like, oh, I got one on the books, and that's it, and hopefully it'll stay that way unless it's a – fiery situation at some point.
How often are you going and checking pitches in between innings if you think they're you don't know where they are?
I check pitches in between innings every inning just because I want to see what, you know, catchers can make the pitches look so good a lot of times that you almost get tricked by you get a ball called and you're like, man, that looked really good. What's he saying? Is it off? Is he have it down? Whatever it is. And then the ultimate check is to go inside and look at on the video and say, okay, well, that was more off than what I thought. He brought it back a little bit, brought it up a little bit. So I like to look at each thing. And then it also helps you remember what you did sequencing-wise to that hitter. So I kind of use that as a tool of going forward off facing this guy the next time, what I do to him the first time, because they're checking the same stuff. They know what you did to him the first at-bat. So it's that pitcher, catcher, hitter, cat and mouse game. Yeah, exactly. So you kind of have to stay one above it, but it's a good check system of, am I seeing it correctly, or is it Garb does a good job presenting pitches, so you might be tricked here and there.
Nice. Last one, 9 of you versus 9 of Plouffe.
Prime Plouffe.
Prime Plouffe, and he was a pitcher in high school.
I was a hitter in high school too.
Okay.
Give me this mic.
I need to defend myself. You go first.
I win.
I haven't seen you swing, so this is going to be tough for me.
I got a couple hits, a couple RBIs.
Did we look up my stats? Because they're probably not good.
No, we didn't look up our stats again. We were talking about it, but we didn't look it up.
You're in 5 seconds. 5 seconds.
When are we taking, like, are we all, like, my glory days of when I was a hitter in high school compared to my pitching now? Or, like, do you get to pick and choose what player you are?
I think
you know what
peak
I mean?
Pitcher, peak hitter.
Okay.
I think you probably.
But what about peak pitcher for you when you were in high school? No, can you take your high school stuff and bring it out?
No, just as a position player.
Okay.
Yeah. These questions we've kind of been asking guys, and I'm starting to side on the side of the pitchers. Because how many runs am I going to put up against Jake Odorizzi as a hitter? 4?
But
5? That's I'm just I mean that's
no
not,
the way I'm thinking about it is if we would play this out and you got 9 at bats continuously off me, like you were the only hitter,
that's true,
you would start like getting into
it's
that
tough question.
You would start getting into that, okay, I've seen him once, twice, 3 times, and now it's 9 times later, and
oh god.
All right, you ready for your stats? 8 plate appearances, 7 at bats, so 1 walk, that was back in 14, 2 hits.
Okay.
286.
286. No extra base hits.
Not great slugging. Okay.
Yeah. So a 661 OPS.
That's kind of
375 on 375 on base percentage there.
Yeah, 3 for 8 when it comes down to it. How many strikeouts? Ooh.
3.
Okay, we're evened out.
This is pretty even.
3 for 3.
Yeah.
You get 3, I get 3. We can piece together the rest. So we're playing into 20 innings apparently.
How's your defense though?
Oh, defense. What's your if you had to play position for an inning or a game, what would you feel most confident in?
Somewhere on the infield. We've talked about this. Gibby and I used to talk about this all the time. Who was just talking.
Yeah.
He was always going to be the replacement outfielder.
Okay.
He was always shagging and running around, and he would be the first to tell you that he was going to be the outfielder. You know, he's heard it. I played shortstop when I was growing up, high school, whatever it is. So that I'm way more comfortable on the infield. And I think pitching too, like ground balls, like you get ground balls a lot more than anything else. So
yeah,
back in the day, used to really back be, but that pitching is really hampered.
Oh, you're
that.
Still doing all right in your day. You're still doing pretty good.
I say back in the day, I mean like 17, 18, when we were all just at our peak physical form of you could do anything when you're a high school kid. But no, I think.
Let's say tie. We tie.
Yeah, I'm fine with the push.
Ty, yeah, Jake wins. spring training, family and stuff is here. You got anything for us or Trevor as part of the media now? If you have any questions, now's the time.
No, Trev. He makes the appearances at the Hall of Fames for the Twins coming out, and he makes his pit stops around. So I actually get to see him.
He's still pretty popular.
Yeah.
He was getting some big love today.
Exactly.
A little juice, he keeps calling it.
Exactly, and I think that's honestly, like, the way Minnesota treats their ex-players is pretty special, with, you know, compared to a lot of places that I've been, and they do a really good job of, even if, you know, it's been 2 years, 3 years, 5 years, 10 years, whatever it may be, like, you come back and you're, like, you're part of the group again. So they do a really nice job, and it's fun to see everybody, like, you know, he comes back, Morneau's there all the time, Joe, Tori, Hawk, like, all these people, there's just a good, it's always fun to have, I hate, this is going to be an ugly word, ex-players come back and, like, get a hangout and talk, you know, because it's, when you're out of a locker room, it's like the offseason, it's kind of weird to get your lingo back in order and be a normal person when it comes to get back in the locker room, and there's so much, that dynamic is so much different, and when you come back, you just see everybody, like, light up, and it's like, man, this is fun again for a couple days. So it's they do a really good job here.
Cool. Yeah, thanks for sitting down with us, man. We appreciate it.
For sure, guys. Thanks for having me.
I'll let you get back to your family and your off day now.
Yeah, right?
Every day.
And that was Jake Odorizzi, a teammate of Plouffe. Fun conversation with him. He was great beforehand. Afterwards, we chatted with him quite a bit. He's a good buddy of yours.
Smart guy. That's what I like talking baseball with him. Talking anything with him just because he's got good insight.
Yeah, cool. All right, we'll be back tomorrow with another mini episode and a mini episode after that. And then on Monday, Jake will be in studio with me to run down whatever's happening. We got to take a deep look at everything that's happening across the league and all that and catch you up on some news. So with that, we're out. See you tomorrow.
See you later.